God, what are we doing? Making fucking ASMR videos now?
Everyone, this is the Coin Rejects.
Jesus Christ.
Today we're going to crinkle some salsitas, but and then we're going to drop some quarters into the Coinbex.
Okay. All right. You're a little too into that.
This game is notable for its 3D vector graphics.
Yes.
Quiet is fucking off-brand for us.
Welcome to episode 22 of the Coin Rejects podcast, the podcast where we talk all about your favorite and your not so favorite classic arcade games. I'm here with my fellow rejects.
I'm Jordan.
Brandon.
Ian.
And I'm Brian, and you can find us on the web at coinrejects.com. Find us on Twitter, twitter.com/coinrejects. On Instagram, instagram.com/coinrejects. And is there anything else?
YouTube/XYZ35.
Voicemail.
And their voicemail.
What's voicemail?
Voicemail is 503-766-2263.
Call us.
Anytime, 24 hours a day, operators are standing by.
Tell us your high scores. Ask us some questions. Tell us you would like us to swear less.
Get drunk and say funny things. On the voicemail, though, so we can hear them.
Gorfy scores.
Yeah.
Want to hear some Gorfy scores?
Yeah, we want to hear your high scores.
Gorf scores.
We haven't heard Gorf scores yet. So here we are, episode 22.
Speaking of scores.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
All right.
Speaking of. For what?
Nice lead in there. So our game of the week today was, well, fucking shit. The game this week was.
For the month.
The game this week was Tax Scan.
Woohoo.
So, bringing up the rear was Jordan with 14,400 points.
Bringing up the start button and then walking away.
In third place was Brian with 45,300. In second place is Brandon with 113,600. And I took the lead on this one with 363,700.
And of course, we played this on the Atari 2600. This was the 2600 yeah. version of the game.
The best port of it.
The best 2600 game. I haven't actually played it, but I did watch a video of it today. So look it up on YouTube. It looks...
like shit.
It looks more impressive than I thought.
It looks like a 2600 game.
But it does not look very fun.
No, this is on my dedicated cabinet. So that's an uncommon machine.
Convertacab.
Yeah. It's a horrible cabinet. They're
800 pounds.
Fucking giant and ugly. And
loud.
They have three fans, so they're super loud. And it's some of the worst hardware ever made. The monitor catches on fire. Power supply burns up connectors. The board set is like seven boards, and they're always breaking. But the game is so good. Really just a terrific game. Pity about the hardware.
What other vectors came out in this?
G80.
G80 is
Star Trek.
Yeah. Yep, Star Trek. I like Star Trek.
I like Star Trek as well. Zector.
Nope.
Zector, Space Fury, Eliminator.
That's it.
I feel like, was there one more?
Zector.
Battlestar Zector. Proto. Eliminator and Eliminator 4 player.
Yeah. Ooh.
Star Trek, Tech Skin, and Zector.
Space Fury, great game.
Yeah, it is a good game. I have a board set for that.
Furry.
Nice.
Yeah, all like very technically impressive games. I think Tax Scan is the best of the lot.
I agree too.
The other ones are all horizontal games. Tax Scan is the only vertical one, and it's, you know, it reminds me of the in between levels of Major Havoc, which are some of my favorite parts of that game. And this whole game is that part. So I'm a big fan of it.
Similar Major. Control too, because you have a analog spinner.
Major Eliminator.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I really like the spinner on this game. It's just super chunky and, you know, a lot of flywheel on it, you know.
A lot
just
of inertia.
Inertia, that's the word.
Yep.
It just feels super good, and it's got the nice grippy sides, and it just really works really, really well with this game. I like it a lot.
Yeah, there's weight to it. It feels good. It's like not the flimsy, like, you know, like Tempest. You know, even though Tempest feels good, it's like this feels good, like the weight. I don't know why.
Yeah, but it feels solid. It's good. It works with the game. And
it's the only quality thing about the game.
Yeah.
Nice it does. Spinner. It feels like it's like, you know, like the best spinner that's available.
Kind of the opposite of, I would say, as far as the spinner feel, I'd say it's like the opposite of Omega Race. Omega Race doesn't really spin. You just like point it.
It's like, yeah, you're constantly holding it and turning it instead of like whipping it while letting it fly around.
Yeah. This is more of a spinner, like playing a sprint car driving game, you know, how you spin the wheel to go around the corners.
Yep.
Yeah, it does get that feeling. You should put a fucking steering wheel on.
Oh, hell yeah.
It might be fun with a steering wheel on. Yeah.
So in Taxcan, it's a space shooter game. So it has three different levels that rotate. So the first one is a pretty standard sort of fixed shooter type deal. I don't know if I'd call it fixed or not. This because stuff is coming at you and there's a scrolling star field. And then the second level is a third person perspective. Same deal though, you'd sort of a tunnel kind of look and stuff is coming down it and you're shooting up at it. And then the third one, you have to traverse a tunnel. And if you get too far off the sides, then your ships explode against the edges and then they all repeat. And you know, it's got a lot of stuff in it that you don't see in a bunch of other games of this genre. I really like that based on the angle, you know, when you move the spinner, you are changing the angle of your ships and there's always forward motion, but your shots don't just go straight up. They go at an angle one way or the other. So you can, you know, you can get around a ship and then come back and hit it from the side. That's something you don't see in a lot of games of this style. So that's a really cool mechanic. And, you know, figuring out how many ships to keep in your squadron and what the shape of your squadron should be is a pretty major component of it. It has a similar mechanic to Gorf, where if you hit the fire button, then it'll cancel whatever shots are on the screen. You have seven ships in your squadron, and you can have seven shots on the screen at once. So if you have a full squadron and you shoot and then you shoot again, it cancels all your shots. So if you're just sitting there at the beginning of the game mashing on the button, none of it will hit anything because it just cancels right as, you know, as soon as they get, you know, a ship or two's length away from you. So you really have to have you just, you know, let them go or burn off a couple of ships so you can shoot more rapidly. So definitely in the later levels, you don't want to have a full squadron. You want to stick it to, you know, like three or four ships, maybe two, depending, so that you can have a little more agility and get your shots up to the top of the screen, because it gets really intense after the third or fourth cycle through.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you're saying about how you turn it and you can have your shots are moving around, but it has a lot of freedom, even though you're, like, fixed in one spot. Like, until you play it, you don't realize how much control you actually have, because it, you know, at first appearance, it feels like you're just, it's like any other shooter game, but, you know, the screen isn't fixed because you can actually scroll, you know, more to the right and actually like leave the enemies off to the side and basically avoid everything that's on screen. That was kind of one of my strategies was if there's a bunch of enemies coming on the screen, then just wrap that fucker to the right. And then once I see any incoming, you know, fire, then I would just immediately go to the left because that way they would just completely like disappear off the screen. So I don't know. There's like a lot of strategy, I think, that obviously some people don't see, I think, at first glance.
Well, you know, it is a really unique game, and it's just impossible to play it in MAME, and the dedicated cabinets are very difficult to come by. So I think a lot of people just haven't been exposed to the game and the way it was really meant to be played. You know, on fire is how it was meant to be played. And it just immediately catches on fire.
Yeah, right now we're burning in hell right now. So.
Yeah, I'd never played one until I came over here the first time and got to play it. I'd never even heard of it before. But yeah, it's a super cool game. It starts up really quickly, like, I think, because I didn't get too much of
It's like, boom!
Yeah, it's like it just throws you right in there, and all of a sudden you're
dead.
You're two or three ships down, and you're like, whoa, I need to like pay attention here, because it doesn't really go easy on you at the beginning. You really got to be on your toes. And the extra live mechanic in this is interesting because you don't just lose your lives and then start up over with a new squadron. You have to keep an eye on how many ships you have left in your squadron, and you have a a backlog of so many ships, and you got to, and you can add those in with the add the ship button. And that's what got me when at the one level is like all of a sudden I was down to like one or two ships, and all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
I still had four that I could have deployed, but I did not. And so it took me out. And then you can get, then it'll give you ships as it comes down. They'll come down from the top of the screen, and those aren't tied into your reserve of ships. So if you get those into the empty spaces of your squadron, which is pretty difficult, at least I found it pretty difficult.
Yeah.
But that's a kind of a cool mechanic for this game, that you don't just lose everything and start fresh, that you got to keep yourself going.
Yeah. When the ships drop down, you really got to like hone in on it, because you could just lose focus and just still cruise right by, you know.
And it seemed like that UFO would always come out right about that time.
It's interesting because it's forgiving in some ways and really unforgiving in others. So anytime those ships come out, you know that as soon as they start, you know, they'll sort of come up on the first level, at least they'll sort of come up from the sides and then drift downwards. Basically, as soon as they start drifting downwards, that UFO is going to appear and start trying to pick your ships off.
You have to get out.
So, you know, I basically, every time I see those ships come out, I start strafing the sides of the screen where it's going to come out. And oftentimes I'll be able to hit it before it can get off a shot. But, you know, you've got to be on high alert. And, you know, a lot of people will get distracted trying to line up the ships, and then the UFO will pick it off. And those ships don't come down very fast, so you really need to be focused on hitting that UFO and then collecting whatever ships you can.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the pinball add-a-ball feature with the add ship deal. It's pretty cool. It's a really cool mechanic. I think that, yeah, like you were saying, it is a very generous game. Like it's not... It's brutal, but at the same time, they give you many opportunities.
They give you lots of ships come down for you to pick up.
They give you, you know, dangling carrots with those,
yeah, for sure,
those ships that come down. But I think that's really, you know, you don't really see that in many titles where they're just like giving you free lives, you know, because like you said, you don't have any lives. You don't have three lives. It's just you have what's on the screen when you start. You
but
have
you
the reserve
get,
ships
you do get
that
extra,
you build.
Right? That add to the reserve.
Yes. I don't forget what it's set to, but yeah, you get extra ships based on your score. But those all go into your reserve,
right?
Not into your squadron, but you can add them to the squadron later. So it's, you know, an interesting sort of resource management aspect to the game in that way, that I can't think of another game that has something like that, that isn't, you know, an RTS or whatever.
Jordan, you're kind of quiet over there. What do you think about TactScan?
I actually enjoyed watching you guys play it more than I enjoyed playing it myself. I'll have to spend some more time with it. I only played it a couple times. I do like it. With a lot of Sega vectors, I really like them because they use more colors generally than the Atari vectors. You get like your purple and your turquoise, and especially like the explosion screen when you die, it's like rainbow. It's really cool. Yeah. You know, like Brian was saying, it starts out really brutal. I mean, I was still like looking to see which button was fire and which button was add
ship.
And
then it was over.
And I had already lost like four of my guys. I did realize, you know, that how to add the ships in, which I needed to figure that out pretty quick. And I did manage to add all my reserves in before, like, losing them all on the first screen. So as far as managing my ships, I used them all. I just didn't play well enough to keep going. But, yeah, it's a great game. I like it. I need to play it some more. And I think I wasn't using the spinner to the full advantage. I wasn't really whipping it around. And yeah. I was basically a sitting duck and just got, like, demolished. And, but, yeah, it's got some amazing enemies, those UFOs with the laser beams. I mean, I was watching those, and when they came out, that was it. I mean, they would just get you. They look like very formidable enemies.
Yeah, they're the worst on the third-person screens. They're pretty easy to pick off on the first person, but the third person, they're just a huge pain to get.
Technically, the whole game is third person, but it's like
on the
3D screens.
Yes, on the one where you have the perspective from behind the ship instead of the one from that's top down.
Okay, and that's also cool, is that it goes two different perspectives.
colonoscopy.
At least, yeah, the colonoscopy screen is definitely 3D. You start out with a 2D, and then it goes, you know, and then it does like this cool little transition where you then get to see the back of your ship. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's there's a neat looking ship. It kind of reminds me of the bad guy ships on Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. What is it? Just the destroyers or whatever?
Destroyers, yeah.
Yeah.
Being, you know, an 82 game, they had some pretty powerful hardware compared to, you know, a Tempest type game or Battlezone even. So you really see that with the amount of shit they put on the screen.
Fucking seven PCBs, they better.
Yeah.
I mean,
One PCB per star, man.
So, I mean, it's just, there's a ton of stuff on the screen. And when you get up into the higher levels, it's just all over the place. It's really, really fast. It's very difficult to keep up, and it's very colorful. And even stuff like, you know, a ship explodes and the individual pieces of it kind of drift off screen for a really long time. You know, there's a lot of processing power going into making all those graphics. And I mean, it looks great. It's just a super fun game. I'm really glad I managed to put one together.
Where was Sega when they made these games? Like
Gremlin.
Geographically.
So I was actually reading up on this earlier. This was actually, I think this is actually an American game. Because they bought
what I thought, that these were American games.
Yeah, they purchased Gremlin, and then it eventually went into being called Sega Electronics. And I believe all the converter games, all the vectors, were made in America. And I think that was Sega's was like losing their ass, basically producing stuff in Japan, so they moved it back stateside. And I mean, I think they're really good games. All the Sega games are vector games are pretty unique.
Yeah, there's not a bad one in the bunch. Eliminator, Zector, those are great games.
The funny thing is when I was there's so much shit on the screen, and I almost felt like I was playing a raster game because there's just so much stuff. You don't get the you know, like in Asteroids or some of the other vectors where there's just simple shapes and they're just, you get that nice glow. I felt in this game like that's kind of missing, and it's just, there's just so much shit going on. You don't even feel like you're really even playing a vector game. It's kind of funny.
I don't remember any Sega G80 games in the arcades when I was a kid, except for Star Trek was everywhere.
Yep,
definitely. And then Space Fury. I remember playing Space Fury as well. I don't remember Taxcan. I don't remember Eliminator. I think Zector is just rare as shit, right? Those didn't really exist.
Yeah, that was, people thought that was lost until like the late 90s, early 2000s. Someone found a board and dumped the ROMs.
Wow. So I've been spoiled playing Zector at shows or at Grinkers. They have one there.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of options for that now. The, you know, there's the Vector Labs Sega multi-vector setup.
Oh, you put the ROMs in there and then you can play Zector. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways of doing that. I think you can convert some of the boards, and Zector, the board configuration on these games is a little bit different. They share several of the boards, but the CPU and the soundboard are different. And the soundboard is, you know, a mix of discrete sounds and an audio chip. So based on the game, they used a different audio board, and we are lucky that Zector used an audio board from some other game. I forget what. So,
what about the meatball? I hear
the
about
meatball.
That
the yeah, meatball. That's one of them.
That's the. Yeah.
I forget what game it's to. So I have everything I need to build that setup, but I just haven't.
Kind of nice because the controls, with a couple buttons and a spinner, and you're done. You can play them all.
Yeah,
except for TaxCan's a bitch because it's vertical.
Yeah, Biltronics makes an adapter for the multi-game kit that'll rotate it, so you can set up a horizontal monitor cabinet and play all the horizontal games, and then it'll rotate it for TaxCan. But you know, it's nice just having it full size in the vertical monitor.
I got the flyer is correcting us because technically it's two gameplay perspectives, top down and a brand new eye level perspective. Flying directly at the squadron.
Level.
Yeah, eye level. Whole new dimension in game skill.
I think everything's eye level, really.
No.
How about Z80 or G80, excuse me, G80 Raster games. Those are rare games. I mean,
Astro Blaster is the only one of those I've ever played.
Astro Blaster is the only one I ever see on a regular basis, and it's not that common.
Yeah, it's fun though. I like that one.
Astro Blaster is great. Yeah, that's got some good management going on.
Yeah, well, that has the kind of old style fuel gauge that runs down.
You shoot too much and your fuel goes down.
Right? Well, I think that it has like the overheating gun thing and the fuel thing.
That's right.
And yeah, it's
milking it.
It's rough, but it is an awesome game, and it's got the
tire pressure,
the individual
gauge.
Sound pots, so you can just crank the explosions. Oh, cool. Super great.
Monster Bash, I've seen one too. Yeah. I know it's rare, but I've seen it. Again, Grinkers has one of those.
Cool looking game.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've ever played that one in a cabinet. I've only played it in MAME. I remember seeing that, and I was like, Monster Bash, that's a pinball. I was like, nope, it's also an arcade
that's
game.
That's a pinball.
It's not that great of a game.
I like the pinball game better.
Have you played Pig Newton?
Never seen it.
I don't think so.
I think I've seen 005.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember at California Extreme one year, Greg McElmore there's a guy with a bunch of bezels, and I didn't even know what 005 was, and Greg McElmore saw that one and picked that up real quick. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell's that game? Oof. I never heard of that.
he didn't find it at the Goodwill?
No.
Oof.
But then I looked at it closer, and it was oof.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
Pop some tags. So yeah, Tag Scan is awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I do love how colorful it is, like you guys were saying. I like how your laser blasts are multicolor. They like go white and red.
Yeah.
It's like those popsicles, the little firecracker ones. Where
hell yeah. You know,
except they don't go blue. They're just white and red.
Yeah.
It's like a candy cane.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Ian got into the higher stages because he got the highest score, there was just so much on the screen coming at you so quickly. It looked crazy.
I like those games, though. I mean, like, if it didn't get more intense, then it'd be kind of boring.
Sure.
It got pretty busy.
Yeah.
Especially for a vector game.
Lots of vectors on the screen.
This is the first time I've played a serious game on that in a while. It was an all right score. I really want to break 500,000 on that game, and I've come really close a couple times, like 480-ish. So, yeah, someday.
And no saving high scores on this one.
Nope.
Yeah.
It does, however, have a free play with attract ROM hack that I made.
Mm. Works good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Sometimes it locks up and you have to restart.
Does anybody else have that? Did anybody?
I released it, but I don't think anyone else is using it.
Because it's rare. Yeah. It really doesn't even like saving high scores because the two warm-up games we played were gone when we started recording the actual challenge. Yeah.
I think we might have turned it off, though, in between. No?
No.
Nope.
Okay. I thought maybe it was the fire code.
Man, I do love the high score entry screen on that. You know, many aspects of this game are so cool. And the when you enter your high scores, the letters traverse down from a tunnel from the center of the screen and then land in the little like divots that look like where your squadron's slots are. It looks so cool.
I have a feeling that the programmers had like plenty of time to work on this or something. You know, there's all sorts of little details that seem like somebody had fun putting them together.
It's just a good concept, a good game, really unique.
I appreciate games that have the unique high score table where you're entering your name in. Like Food Fight. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Not just a block of letters.
Quantum. Your letter.
There's no rub on the screen.
Yeah. Reactor. Rub. It's so fucking hard to put your high score in. It's like a mini game in itself.
Yeah. Definitely a cool game. And one of the only uprights in the Cabaret Kingdom.
It's true. It takes a special game for me to own an upright.
I think that's why I didn't do good, because I was just in shock that there was an upright game around. Because
you're looking straight ahead instead of down.
It is literally the only upright in my entire game room. I guess, I don't know, do you consider the Outrun sit down? That's not an upright, no?
Mm, it's full size.
Full size.
It is full size, but yeah. So I have two pinball machines and a cocktail and Outrun and Tax Scan. Other than that, all minis.
All fake games.
as they spill out into the living room.
Oh my god, dude, it's it's intense. I'm up to like 40. It's
oh man,
just the minis.
So you mentioned they had, you know, like Monster Bash at Grinker's, Jordan, and I understand you went up there recently.
I was there 2 weeks ago, I think, with my friend Richard.
You made an ill-advised trade. You traded you traded a classic and difficult to find Atari Vector, a Red Baron. You traded your Red Baron for some other game.
I was going to that didn't work out, but I was going to trade my Red Baron, but
I didn't hear that.
It didn't work out after all.
Did you drive it there?
No. Richard drove his there. So
he fucking snaked you.
No.
You got snaked.
No, it wasn't my deal. Richard was selling games and to Grinker's, and he was like, he came over the night before we left, and he was going to trade me his Red Baron for my Red Baron, because his Red Baron has nicer side art than mine. And he was like, and so that was my big trade, but that didn't happen. So you were gonna
downgrade your Red Baron?
No, I was just gonna get him out of the
one trade side art, man, to swap side art in the parking lot, just fucking peel it off and just
I wasn't really trading a game. I was trading a game for the same game, but we didn't do it after all. Because it just didn't work out. It was okay.
It's you guys have your games in the fucking basement.
That's right. It's not worth moving them. So anyhow, so I went over to his house the next day, and we hauled his Red Baron out of the basement and a Paperboy. He had gotten everything. He sold 10 games to Steve, and he had... he had gotten everything out of his basement except for those two. He waited until there was a bunch of us over there to get them out because they're both heavy as hell. So, but anyhow, the trip to Grinker's is always fucking great. I mean, that is the best arcade for classic gaming I've ever seen, and I'm convinced it's the best one in the world. I mean, there are 250. There are 250
strong words.
There are 250 games on the floor. None of them are junk. I mean, they're all fucking classics, and they're. So many rare games that most people would never even want to let anybody play them, and they're out there on the floor ready to go. So many black and whites, it's just amazing. I was there for the weekend. I played games all day Saturday after we moved games around and picked stuff up. And Steve's always a great host. He took great care of us while we were there. And I want to go there like every month. It's really the best arcade ever. So I can't say enough good stuff about that place. And we've been talking about Grinkfest, and the dates were announced, and I immediately got like the closest Airbnb I could find to the place. This time I got one like a house that's like 3 blocks away. Can't wait. And but I think I'm going to just fly out this time. Brian's going to come with me. Couple other friends, and that way we don't waste 12 hours driving there and back. We can use those 12 hours to play more games, because there's plenty of games to play. I mean, we were talking about Monster Bash. Honestly, I didn't even play it. I played Zector.
At least you saw it.
I saw it, yeah. It was right real close to Reactor. Which I should mention. I played Reactor there, and I beat my 100,000 goal. So there's my second goal now beat. I got to the top of Ice Cold Beer, and now I've got 100,000 on Reactor.
Nice.
And
I'm on top of the world, man.
Yeah, I'm on top of the world. I crush all my goals.
Your next goal should be 500,000 on tax scam.
Yeah. You'll be seeing me a lot if you want me to do that. If you want me over here every night, that would be my next goal. So I haven't come up with the next goal yet, but I'm feeling really good about getting those two goals. Yeah, I'm just like thinking, oh yeah, I'm making all these plans for Grinkfest in... But the problem is, it's in October. There's so many months.
Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So I think I got to like plan another trip out there in between or something. It's just, it's so much fun. I mean, that arcade is unbelievable. And the sandwiches are good, too. Yeah.
So is it pure video?
Steve is very much a video game guy. There's a few pinballs there, but it isn't like, you know, Medieval Madness, Addams Family, that type of like... You know, oh, these are the best pinballs. You got to have these. he has like maybe a dozen pinball machines, and they're more, I guess, late 80s stuff he remembers from the arcade. And he's just not into pinball. He's a video game guy. Like almost every game that he has there, he could tell you the story about when he first played that game or when he first saw it. I mean, he was a video game nut. Even he remembers playing black and white games even when he was a kid. So he'll just like, oh yeah, I remember seeing Anti-Aircraft, you know, out at this restaurant that I used to play it at with my dad. You know, he, as a matter of fact, I did a little segment with him, and we interviewed and talked about video games. So, and you'll be able to hear that here. All right, guys. So I'm on location here. This is Jordan. Kind of a different segment. We're live from an arcade, so you might hear some more background noise than usual. But here I am in Eagle, Idaho, with Steve from Grinker's Arcade, the best classic arcade I have seen, and I've been to a few. This place, if you can make it out here, you really have to. If you can, if you like classic gaming, he has more classic games on display running day after day than I have ever seen anywhere in my life. Rare stuff that should just, that most people would just, you know, encase in plexiglass and keep the dust off of it. He's got it out here for the unwashed masses. It's always a pleasure to come out here. And so I'm here with Steve. So if you want to say a little something, introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I was thinking, when you were saying that, I was thinking about the encased in plastic thing. And there was a thread on Clav about some museum place, and they had a really cool Asteroids with hand-painted artwork on the I'm pretty sure it was a hand-painted artwork marquee. No, or was it the bezel? I don't know, but a significant portion of it was hand-painted. It was the prototype, and they had that prototype Asteroids machine in a plexi-like case, right, with a little, like a museum little sign thing that said like the history of the machine. And it was really, really, really cool. And I would love to have been there and seen that myself. But yeah, we totally have the games that would fall into that category are not in a plexi case. We've got a bunch of games here like Warrior. You know, Warrior is just a amazing, you know, super rare game. And it's here for anybody to play. We have a Missile Command cockpit. You know, also, I think there's 13 of those games known to exist. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun. We like Zector is really cool. We were talking earlier about wanting to make sure that, or not wanting to make sure, but wanting to find a way to make it so we have a guy that's working for us. His name is Les, and he's a code level guy, like a zeros and ones kind of guy. And we're trying to get him to do two things for us right now. The first thing that we're trying to get him to do for us is make it so that the horn sound on Tugboat is less loud, because the problem is the horn sound is like it's like the honk. Yeah, it's like the honk, exactly. It's like the honk sound on Fire Truck, and so that's the kids play it just to do that, right? And so the problem is that the sound on it is so loud, if they turn the volume up loud enough to be able to hear the game, the Tugboat sound is so bad that it will drive people out of the place, right? But if I turn the Tugboat sound down to a tolerable level, the game sounds can't be heard. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And it's hilarious that you go right into talking about a Moppet game, because there's so few people are into Moppets, but we have Ian, who is totally into Moppets as well. And I sent some pictures back home of your Tugboat and another Moppet that you had, and he was immediately like, hey, put that thing in your pocket and sneak it out of there, man. That thing's great.
Did you text him the picture of the Moppet from the storage place?
I did.
Which one was that?
It was Leprechaun.
Leprechaun's there, and which one's here?
Tugboat is here.
Tugboat's here. So Leprechaun, I like Leprechaun a lot more because it has it's the Tugboat's cabinet was so destroyed we had to replace it. So it's a replacement cabinet. It's two specs, but it's new cabinet, right? And so the one that was at the storage place, which one was that?
Leprechaun.
Leprechaun at the storage place. That one's all original, and it's really kind of cool because there's two Moppet cabinets. One's like more of like that straight down thing. Yeah. The other one's kind of that curve thing.
Right.
I'm not sure which one I like better, but I remember I played that Moppet, the one I have in the back here, Tugboat, one with a loud horn, right? I played that one at Starcade at Disneyland. Upstairs, there was like an upstairs thing. You'd go up there. They had like air hockey and stuff, but the behind the air hockey, they had like a row of like four or five games, and one of those games was a Moppet Tugboat. And so I was super stoked when I got to see that Moppet Tugboat. And to have it here, it's like totally like, you know, 8-year-old childhood memory.
That's great. I do not remember playing Moppets when I was a kid. I only learned about them after collecting arcade games. So you bring up a good point, though, that one game was restored cabinet and the other one's original. Now, do you have a preference for restored or original cabinets?
Yeah, so this is like a religious question, right? So it's there's two different schools of thought, and I don't think either school of thought is right or wrong. I think they both have right now. I think the it's like to each his own. Like in certain industries, like in firearms collecting, original is everything, right? Do not mess with an old school firearm. With coin collecting, do not mess with an old, like a 100-year-old coin. It ruins it, right? So I put arcade games into that particular category. And so as such, I like them original. I would much rather have an original cabinet than a restored one. But that's just me. I mean, like you have that, Fetish Boy. He restores all of his cabinets and they look beautiful. And I don't think, oh, that guy sucks because he restored his games. But it's just not the way I would do it, right? You know, if it was up to me, I'd take one of each. I'll take an original one and a fully restored one.
That brings up another good question. When you say one of each, do you ever have duplicates of the same game?
Okay, so there's two layers to that question, or two answer layers to that question. Now, the first one is track and field is track and fielding. Yeah, that sucks about our track and field. So we're standing here above our track and field, and right before he did his thing, he was like, hey, they're in jail bars. And like the characters, like every character that's running has like a, I don't know, like a 2-inch like vertical lines around them.
They look like they're in a cage. It's kind of interesting.
So, well, I think Dan would probably say, reseat the ROMs. And so that's what we'll probably do. Dan, for those of you guys that don't know, Dan is Hattrick on the Kalav forums. And Dan is Dan and Ark Revival. Without those two guys, this place would not exist. So those guys deserve just as much credit as I do for what exists here. You know, Hattrick, Ark Revival, I love you guys. Thank you much. So the question before we got into track and field was something. It was
Duplicate games.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, there's two layers to that. Okay. So real quick, the first layer is duplicate games on the floor right now. Yes, we do have duplicate games on the floor right now. We have four Galagas right now, partially because we're going to be doing a Galaga tournament coming up, and also partially because Galaga is a popular game, so having four of them is kind of almost necessary. We also have two Super Mario Brothers. The reason we have two Super Mario Brothers is because that game is A, popular, and B, it's a longer play game. You could drop a quarter and play that game for 6, 7, 8 minutes, no problem. Those two combination of things, again, make it kind of necessary to have two Super Marios. There's a second half. The second half of that previous question was duplicates of games that aren't on the floor, so games we have in storage. So when we can, we try and get, when we have an opportunity of finding a part or a game that's relatively rare that we could use as a, like a, oh my gosh, if our super rare game stops working, having another one as an absolute emergency to use for parts is very nice to have. So when we can, we try and double up on stuff like that. But, you know, it's not always possible. So we have you guys will be the first to know. So you guys and then anybody listening to this podcast are the first ones to know that we have a computer space coming, which is so super cool. But this almost does fall into that category of plexiglass, you know, case.
Yeah.
Because it's fiberglass, right? So, you know, somebody kicks it or pushes it over, it's like game over.
Yeah.
So what we're thinking about doing with that computer space is having a computer space like weekend where we bring it out, we put it kind of central on the floor where it's very visible by the staff and everybody else, and kind of maybe do a rope where people can come up and play it, you know, like in an organized fashion type of deal. So that's going to be kind of cool. That computer space should be here. Dave was Arc Revival was super cool in helping us get that game. Somebody contacted him locally and said, "Hey, Dave runs a Craigslist ad, and it says if you need game repairs, call me." And he's been running that ad for many, many years. And this guy had been seeing Dave's ad on Craigslist year after year after year. And so when the guy finally decided to sell his computer space, he called Dave and said, "Dave, I've been seeing your ad for years. Would you know where to give this a good home?" And Dave said, "Yeah, if you work with me, I'll get it to Grinkers." And so Dave and I worked this deal where he took extraordinary effort to get this computer space and bring it back to his place. And it's at his place now, and at some point in the near future, it's going to come here. So 100% credit to Dave, Arc Revival, for helping us get a computer space. And you guys that came this weekend, what games did you bring?
We brought 10 games over from Portland. My friend Richard, there's a Crazy Climber, and it's a Bichu version, Robotron, Paperboy, Red Baron, and six others. Oh, what's the Toonie game?
The Toonie is Cosmos, which is super cool. I can't believe the condition of that game. So it's so I guess we should give credit to the troublemaker himself. So Stimpy called me up and was like, "Hey, Steve," or no, he PM'd me on the forums and said, no, I think he texted me actually and said, "Hey, I want to sell some games. Are you interested?" I said, "What games?" And he gave me a list of games, and we struck a deal. And then all of a sudden, you know, these three guys from the West Coast drove in to Eagle to drop off these 10 games. And now we're here. We started, like, drinking beer, and now we're here, like, 4 hours later. And I'm... Oh, like, that blown-out tire was crazy. It was a... Do you have the ability to put photos on the website? I would love for you to accompany whatever this airs on. Accompany it with a photo of that tire. Yeah. It was shredded. It was.
So I guess I can tell that story. Yeah, we drove over from Portland to Eagle, Idaho, which is supposed to be about a six-hour drive. We had our first blown tire on the trailer about 1 hour into it, and it was absolutely shredded. The trailer was making the truck go all over the place. The guy driving it, Randy here, was like shaking in his, you know, and just like, what the heck, something's wrong here. So, but luckily we were prepared. We had a spare, got that on there, and then off we go again until, and then the truck ran out of gas at one point, but we called AAA and we got that. And once we got to Idaho, everything was all good. We met up with Steve, you know, moved some games around, unloaded them in his warehouse, and that's where I saw all the duplicate rare games that this guy has. He had stuff in his warehouse that I was like, oh my God. And then I come to the arcade and he's got the same stuff here. And I'm just like, you know, people would kill for one of those games and he's got multiples. I was very impressed with what he's got here, but it's been a great day. It's about midnight here. We've been drinking for a while, but hopefully it doesn't sound too bad. Steve's got something to say, I can tell right now.
I'd love to tell a story about Stimpy at this, but I'm gonna not tell the story. Stimpy had a successful party evening here tonight. We returned him to his hotel, or you guys did, I should say.
Randy, you want to get in here? Okay, he's gonna tell a story.
And since nobody really knows Stimpy, right? Oh, everybody knows him. Oh, I can't do it to him then. I can't.
All right, you don't get that story. We'll cut that part out.
So we both saved you. Just so you know, Stimpy, we both took care of you.
Anyhow, he's safe and sound in the hotel room. Okay, I'm going to ask you, what made you decide to open a public arcade? I mean, I know a lot of collectors, we all have this thought in the back of our mind to share the games with more people than just in our small circle of friends and arcade collectors. What made you want to do this?
All right, so right before I answer that question, I want to talk about the previous thing that you said, which was seeing all your duplicate games. And then that came here, they're here too. So it definitely falls into that category of it's a safety factor. You know, it's really it's scary to have Warrior on the floor knowing that if something dies, I can't necessarily replace it. So having a second one makes me feel safe. And so that's my primary drive. My secondary drive is I just love collecting. You know, it's so much fun to have I look at these games like a vintage car collector would look to like some car collecting grail, like a 57 Corvette or something crazy like that, right? So, or whatever it is that you're into, baseball cards or comic books or whatever. My thing is arcade games. So I love when I get my hands on like a classic arcade game, I'm like, I'm super stoked. So it's like an adrenaline rush every time.
So you still get the rush from the... from the hunt, basically, which is one of the greatest parts about arcade collecting.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, when you guys rolled up today, yeah, like, you rolled up, there's a truck with a trailer, and behind the, you know, in the trailer, there's 10 games, and all 10 of the games are working, and all 10 of the games are, like, legit games. So, we talked about the Cosmos game. That game is by Toonie. Toonies, they're the same ones that do the Moppets.
Yeah.
But this is Cosmos is one of their upright versions. We had the other one that I'm I guess most immediately excited about is the Roadrunner, which is a Atari System 1 game. I like that because it's so Atari System 1. There's Road Blasters and Marble Madness, Indiana Jones. There's the one with the weird name. Yeah, Period of Pack Rat, and. And Roadrunner. So the only one I'm missing now after a result of your trip is Peter Packrat. Exactly. So I'm down to one. So I was down. I had two on my list. Now I'm down to one on that list. So if anybody has a Peter Packrat kit, I would very much enjoy accepting your donation. We actually had you tell them about the pinball thing. I'm gonna use the facilities.
All right. So another part of our trip, after we dropped off the 10 games at Steve's warehouse, he was like, hey, guys, can you give me a hand? I got a pinball to pick up. And we're like, yeah, sure, no problem. I mean, that's what we've been doing for the last couple of days, of just moving games and driving games around. Let's do it. Steve's always takes care of us whenever we're here. We've been drinking beer since the minute we got here and takes care of our tab. And he's a great guy to hang out with in general. He's got lots of great ideas and... I don't have to say how good his arcade is. So we go over to a guy's house, nice house. The guy was a pharmacist, and he had a Gottlieb. It's like their version of 8-ball. I forgot what it's actually called. It's the one that goes, hey, buddy, stop walking and start chalking or something like that. Anyhow, this guy had reached out to Steve at Grinker's here, and he was tired of the game. And had asked Steve if he wanted it for free. So we picked up like a, 1990 Gottlieb Premier 92 pinball. And it was a free game. We just had to like take it down some stairs. And the guy just knew Steve as part of the community and wanted to see his game go to a good place. So there we go.
Yeah, there's actually been, this is the fifth time that somebody's donated something to us, and that's really cool. So whether people have donated stuff to us or whether people have sold stuff to us, games or parts, everybody that has done that has made a contribution here. And so if you've ever sold a game or if you've ever sold a part, just know that we appreciate that like a ton, because it's not easy. It's not easy to find parts all the time, right? And so I've really had a bunch of people that have stepped up from everywhere, honestly, and have sold us parts that they did not really want to part with, but they were willing to part with it because they knew what was happening. So what that really makes Grinkers is a like a collective effort, right? There's like 300 people that have helped make Grinkers what it is. So if you're one of those 300 people, I want you guys to know that, you know, I know that and I appreciate that.
All right. I think I had one more question that I didn't get an answer to, and it was how many games do you think you have, Steve? Or how many games do you think Grinkers has?
On the floor, we have 253 games. There's a bank of 5 pinballs and 2 banks of 4 pinballs. And earlier today, we took the time to do that math, and I think that was how many pinballs?
13
pinballs. I actually did need help with that earlier today. I'm not very good at, like, simple stuff. But yeah, 13 pinballs, and then so that leaves 240 games. So 240 games, 13 pinballs. Most of them are working right now, thanks to the hard work of Bill and Dan and everybody. And they're all vintage, right? So they're all vintage. We are 70s and early 80s mostly. It's kind of our sweet spot. So the Bronze Age black and whites. And the early 80s is really my core focus. But we do get into the 90s with Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. I like those games, good games. And we also have Simpsons and X-Men and that whole scene as well. So right on, man. Thank you.
I got one more. Do you remember your first game that you ever got?
Yeah, sure, man. I go all night. If you've got questions, I can talk, right? You can tell, right? I've got no problem talking, and I like to share my story, right? So I know I like to what's it called when you stand on that thing and you make everybody listen to you?
Soapboxing.
Yeah. So I have no problem doing that. I'll just go for as long as you want, man. I don't care. What was your question?
First game.
There was not a first game. There was 3 first games. Really quick, the story goes like this. So I was on Craigslist. I was looking at classic cars and a keyword match, you know, classic or vintage or whatever. All of a sudden, I was looking at 3 arcade games, and they were about 20 minutes away. It was, and all 3 of them are here right now in Grinkers today. The first one is our Lunar Lander over there behind Q-Bert, next to Missile Command. The Battle Zone over here by the Sinistar and the Black Widow. And the Super Cobra, which is out there by the Xenophobe and the... Oh, gosh. The game that's... I'm struggling with this name because I... It's one of the most recent games I got. It's called Mad Planets. Yes,
oh, yeah.
Mad Planets. So it's by Mad Planets. Super stoked to have Mad Planets, by the way. Mad Planets is a Gottlieb game. Same world as the game that you like, which is Reactor.
Reactor, yes. There's a beautiful Reactor here, and I'll just mention that I got over 100,000 for my first time ever on the Reactor.
I saw the photo.
It's on that game. I don't know if the high scores stand, but it'll be here. Come try to beat it. Anyhow, I guess I'm running out of questions. I can't believe I'm doing that. Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a question. So first of all, you're like the organizer of this podcast, correct?
I'm just one of 4 guys. I was actually kind of roped into it. The other guys decided to do it, and I was supposed to be a special guest for the first episode, but I've been on board ever since.
And so when you guys produce an episode, when you're all done, you edit it and then upload it. Is that correct?
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay, so that's like super, super cool. I would like to ask you a question then. As the editor and uploader of this podcast that you collectively produce with the 4 of you guys, would you sell me any of your games right now today?
No, I don't sell games.
No, I am. We did talk earlier about wanting to find a few games. And was it you or was it Stimpy that was like, oh, yeah, no problem, we'll find that for you? That was you, wasn't it? So do you want to talk about the games that I want?
I know what you want, and we're going to try to find you one. I know you want a cliffhanger. I know that's a game that you don't have and that you do want. I mean, looking around here, I can't believe there are many games that you still need. But Yes, indeed. The cliffhanger. Was there anything else that you're looking for?
Yeah, a cliffhanger. I definitely want a cliffhanger. I remember seeing Cliffhanger, I'm pretty sure the first, like, definitely the first year it was released, because I was a little kid. And I remember people smoking, and there being, like, a bunch of big kids playing that game, and me, like, trying to, like, sneak a peek between the kids, and seeing Lucci, whatever his name is.
Lupin 3.
Lupin, yeah. So I'm not sure if that's the main character, but seeing that sequence happening and being like, I want to play that game, because I remember playing Dragon's Lair and learning that game and kind of getting like mediocrely good at it, seeing Cliffhanger and being like, oh, I really want to play that. And I finally got to play it. I played it probably a dozen times maybe, and then the game was gone and that was it. So I have it's really weird actually. For most of the games in here, I can tell you where the first time I played that game was. So like Phoenix, or maybe not the first time, but the time I remember the most. So Phoenix, I remember playing at Van Nuys Golf Course after my dad and his brother would play a round of like 9 holes. There was like 3 games at the end, and Phoenix was there. I'd always play Phoenix. Qbert, I played at 20 Grand Palace. So a lot of the games I know exactly where I played it, but that game I don't.
I know you mentioned earlier that you pick games because they're games that relate to you. They are the games that you remember playing. And the games, and that's why you pick them. I mean, we talked about getting newer pinballs like Medieval Madness and stuff like that. And you said, well, no, I don't remember playing those games. So they're not going to be here.
Yeah, it definitely falls into the category of I make decisions based on. So this place only exists because I guess this ties. I'll go really quick. So. You asked me about my first games. I gave you the first 3 games. So when I bought the first 3 games, I was like, oh, wow, those 3 games look awesome against that wall. There's room for 4 more games against that wall. So I was like, oh, okay, I got to find 4 more games to fill up that wall. Once I had that wall filled, I was like, oh, if I fill that wall behind me, I'll have games on both sides. Then it'll feel like a real arcade. From there, it went to, oh, let me put an aisle down the middle. Then I'll have 2 rows of games. Then it'll be totally legit, right? And so that was the evolution. And this place only exists as an evolution of the arcade that I would want to create for myself. And as a result, I make decisions based upon the stuff that I want to be here, not the stuff that is necessarily in the highest demand by people. And so, yeah, whether it's pinballs or arcade games, I put what I want here. And it's kind of my vision, right? So it's kind of cool because you have an atmosphere and a game selection and an environment and the staff. And it's kind of like this whole big, like, environment, right? All, like, wrapped up into one. And so this is the environment that I've chosen. People seem to dig it. I dig it. And I wouldn't change it just because of demand.
Nice. So I would say you stay true to the game 100%. These games are here because that's what you want.
Yeah, for sure. These games are only here because I was. So I guess I'll tell you my first earliest 2 childhood memories. One is in a restaurant. Like, I'm not sure what kind of restaurant it was, but there's a restrooms and like a restaurant area, and between them there's a pretty wide hallway. And in that hallway there's 3 games, and one of them is any aircraft, black and white Atari. And so I remember my dad teaching me the 3 buttons. My second arcade memory is a Galaxian at 7-Eleven. My dad worked weird shifts, and so not weird shifts, but he'd work weird hours. So he'd come home at night, like at like 10 o'clock at night. And every once in a while, I'd be able to coerce my dad to take me to 7-Eleven at 10 o'clock at night, like on a Wednesday. And yeah, we played Galaxian. I should also give a shout out to the dude that's definitely been dead for at least 40 years. Or I guess at least 30 years. There's an old guy at the 7-Eleven, must have been 85 years old, in whatever, 82 or 80 or whatever, right? And so he always gave me the quarters that had a red paint stripe across them, which meant they were refund quarters, right? He would always give me those quarters. So I would play my 2 quarters, we would go to leave, and the old dude would always like insist on giving my dad 2 of those red stripe quarters. I had to go back and play 2 more games. That's my second arcade memory. So the arcade memories of my childhood drive everything that I do here. And so, yeah, this Grinkers exists because it helps me continue to be a kid like forever, and that's like priceless, right?
That is priceless, man. To relive the childhood over and over again every day. I'd say that's what makes this arcade so great. You stayed true to the games that make you feel good, and there's a whole lot of us that also feel good that way. Yeah. So I thank you for your time. You have anything else you want to add in there?
No, I agree. I think I also want to say, I'm not sure if the Luna City dude, I'm not sure who that guy is. I know what the story was with Luna City, but I want to acknowledge also that Luna City was inspiration for Grinkers. So if the Luna City dude ever listens to this, I want you to know that when I saw, like, there's like a photo that's like top down, like you're on a ladder or something, right? And you're looking down and you see like rows of games. When I saw that probably like a week or 2 weeks after I first started my first few games, and when I saw that, it was over. It was game over. There's no stopping. So that's it. Thank you.
I know that photo you're talking about. Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure.
Cut. God, that was so good, Jordan. Oh my God, I haven't even heard it yet.
Nice.
Neither have I.
So maybe you'll be cutting that part out.
How was playing Reactor versus your MAME? Like, was it your MAME cabinet that you have it set up for? Was it like way easier or what?
No, not way easier. It was very similar. I didn't really notice a big difference. I guess when I set up my MAME, it was like fresh after coming back from California Extreme, where I'd played a bunch of Reactor. So I just used how I remember the control to be. My friend Dan, he was over pretty right after that too. And I think he had been up at Chris Mansfield's place, like recently playing his Reactor. And you know, he was, you know, not bitching or complaining about it, saying it was funky or weird. And he's more of a video game player actually than I am. And he wasn't really noticing any huge differences. There are subtle differences, I think, like with some of the sounds. I think the original one had more voice in it, than what MAME did with the samples, but I didn't really scrutinize it because I played two really good games. I mean, I think one was like 95,000 and the next one was 100,000 plus, and then I stopped from there. I used a little technique that I had read about where basically once you run out of decoys, it gets really hard to get a lot of points. It's one of those games where, kind of like Zookeeper, where to get big points, it's not the straightforward play the game type of thing. It's like, you know, like Zookeeper, you're not trying to really keep the animals in. You're trying to get big jumps. Yeah. Reactor, same thing. You're not trying to really just fly through the screens and kill all the enemies. You're trying to really trap a bunch in the bonus chambers. That's really what it's all about. And when you have decoys, you dump them in the bonus chamber at the beginning of the round, and you have like 4 to 6 enemies that come out all at once, and then you trap them in there, and then you get huge bonuses. And then when you die, you get those bonus points, and you'll have so much bonus points built up that when you collect those, you'll get like multiple men. And so you'll get more men than you have decoys. But then when you run out of decoys, it becomes very hard to keep playing the game, at least for me. And I got to where I would sacrifice my guys. So I would sneak into the bonus chamber, lure the enemies in there where they will kill you. You can't kill them in there. It's just too small. You're just bouncing around too much. But hopefully you get a bunch of them in there before you die. And then when you respawn, they will still be in that chamber. And then you block them in and you get your big bonus. There are people who say that when you get up high enough on that level, you can trap them in there and get enough bonus points where you will get an extra man. I wasn't finding that. I think extra men are at 15,000 and I would get like 10,000. So I could burn up like 3 men and maybe get 2 men back. So I was still going down in men. I couldn't go on forever. But if you can do that, they say you can go on forever. I mean, if you can sacrifice a guy and get enough points to get another guy, then it's going to go on forever. I mean, as long as you can keep doing that. And I think that's where the big, like, you know, Twin Galaxy, whatever, high scores come from. But I got my 100,000 that I wanted. I still want to get to the next round where the it does an invisible wall thing, kind of like Gravatar, where now your wall that fucks you up, you can't see it. You just have to like know where it is, which I don't think would be that hard. But the reactor, it goes back to the type where you can touch it, where it doesn't just like suck you in and kill you really quick. And I would like to play it like that. Maybe I need to
buy a reactor.
Well, fire up main and MAME and cheat. You know, like go ahead.
Gosh.
Well, that's how these guys get good at it. Don't fool yourself. All these, you know,
no,
they cheat. They practice the higher levels.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, instead of like going through a whole game and like, oh, here's where I want to be. Oh shit, I only have one man left.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah. So you basically fast forward the game to where you want to actually practice. And that's what they do. Don't fool yourself. These fucking competitive gamers are a bunch of cheaters.
No one gives a fuck about those.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the one at Grinker's was set at the same the difficulty level as your, if you have yours set?
I think so. I think really all you can set it at is how I think it's like 15,000 for an extra man. I don't think it was any different. And that's one thing, like, if I play an emulation game, I don't, like, try to make it, like, super easy because I feel like I'm cheating already, so.
You feel guilty.
Yeah, I feel bad.
Dirty.
Yeah. I feel a little bad.
I do.
Yeah.
I feel a little dirty.
Playing it on the Xbox.
And so, yeah. And like Omega Race, it is a thing where you can do 2 credits and get, like, 7 men.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Or 1 credit and get 3 men. I played it on the 3 man. I did not do the 2 credit.
Good for you, Jordan.
So, yeah. It really doesn't help you that much because, like I was saying, it's really the decoys that keep you going. And you get new decoys by the way you play the game. You have to knock out the rods on both sides without dying, and then you get another decoy. So that's really where you focus your efforts when you're playing it.
Yeah. I got to say, I have, like, mad respect for the... for Grinkers for just sticking with the games that they have nostalgia for, or he has nostalgia for, versus what he thinks that people will like. Because when you can be in the position to just have whatever games that you like versus what, oh, like you were saying, you know, Medieval Madness and Adam's Family, and like, you know, it's just what he has nostalgia for. And I think that a lot of businesses lose focus on what other people want. I mean, if you're there to make money, right? But obviously, in his position, it seems like it's his private arcade, right?
Yeah,
and he's allowing people to come into it versus catering to people that expect certain games.
That's what it feels like to me. I mean, it is a legitimate business and everything, but it really feels like he does it for the love of his games that he wants to play. And he really gets a kick out of having Rare stuff out on the floor and seeing other people play it, and they won't be able to play it anywhere. Like, I'm thinking, you know, oh yeah, I played Zektor there, yeah, no big deal. Monster Bash, you know, Environmental Distrotron, you know, you name it, he's got it there. And but in reality, yeah, you wouldn't normally be able to play that stuff. And yeah, it's just a unique place.
Yeah, so definitely gets a lot of respect for, you know, love of the game. I'm way into that more than monetary aspects.
Yeah, stay true to the game. I don't believe that that this is his primary breadwinner and he needs to make it uber profitable, you know, to keep shoes on his kids or whatever.
And as he told me, he likes to hoard games, because I saw the pictures when you went last time of 3 Burger Times lined up, and I was like, hey, want to lighten your load on one of those Burger Times? And
no.
He was like, no. I like to hoard games.
Hey, so. Was there a dedicated Havoc on the floor?
I don't believe I saw a dedicated Havoc on the floor. Good point.
What's up with that?
Was there a converted?
I don't think I saw
it. No, I think there was a converted. I've seen a converted one there.
Yeah, but. I don't think I saw a dedicated Havoc. Good point. Yeah, I don't know. I know one thing that's interesting is we brought over 10 games that he bought from a friend of mine, and some were pretty rare, but he also had them already. So I was like, what do you do? You just want all the games? And he was, you heard in the interview, he You know, he just wants to be able to keep he just wants to be able to keep the games running. So if one of these rare games that might take a while to get repaired goes down, he would rather be able to pull out another one of those rare games and put it out on the floor.
Pull out another anti-aircraft so it keeps earning.
That's even better, like when instead of just swapping out PCBs, just rolling a whole fucking cabinet.
Yeah, here you go.
Got another one of those. Here you go.
Maybe it's not the PCB that went out.
Yeah. I mean, he had...
Maybe it's the wood grain.
He had Moppets in reserve. He had like multiple Warriors. There was just like, it was pretty
Moppets in reserve.
Yeah. Man, I got a couple Moppets in reserve.
One thing I saw was that I'd never seen before is that Williams laser game, Star Rider.
He
had one of those, the big huge version.
Game fucking sucks, but it's cool. It's cool looking.
Yeah, I'd never seen one in real life. And just lots of old classic Taito games that the real old, before the classic Taito cab, that first cab that like...
The good looking one.
Yeah, the good looking cab that like Crazy Climber was like, in.
Yeah, the Stratovox type,
Yeah, he had all those games, like multiples of those. He must be into those too. Like, the titles are escaping me right now.
I like those cabinets way better than the later ones.
Got beautiful cabinets.
Woo, yeah.
All right, so speaking of arcades, we...
speaking of games that earn.
We've been around in a lot of arcades.
yeah, that's
or
right.
Or possibly games that are going to pull money as opposed to classics.
So our local famous arcade, Ground Control, just opened their new expanded space. So there was a coffee shop around the corner from their old space that shut down a while back. And
Backspace?
Yep. Backspace, yeah. That was the one. So they've been building that out for a while, and they finally had their opening of that. And we got to go to the pre-opening day party and check that new space out. So I think it's a very cool space, and they've done some really cool stuff with it. It seems like it's mostly the same games like they had in the old space. I know that their plan is, now that the new space is open, they're renovating the old one, and then they're going to have them all joined together. So they'll have a big net increase in space, and that's pretty exciting. What do you all think?
I think that's great. I mean, when they open the other space, it's going to be twice as big as before. So the bigger arcade, the better. And what they've done with the new space, it's beautiful. It is really good looking. I mean, it looks like War Games. So if you ever saw the movie War Games, I mean, they reenacted the whole, like,
The big board.
It's there. It's
speaking of Big Bird.
On
PowerPoint, man.
It is really cool. I mean, this place, just even if you didn't like video games, it's worth it just to go. And honestly, a lot of people who don't like video games go there. So that's perfect.
I think one of the coolest things, speaking of the War Games theme, is they theme the bar after the Whopper. And they even have that strip of lights that is continually blinking every time you see the Whopper, like, thinking and doing something. The whole bar has that theme going on, and even the bar looks like it. And, super cool setup with the screens where they have the exact same layout as the movie, and they've got vector maps and like they have for showing where the nukes are going to go, but they also have their specials up there. And
no animation though. I was disappointed. No animation.
Seems like they were screens, working some kinks out of that system in general.
They were working some kinks out because at some point there was water that just poured down on one of the games from the air conditioner, which was interesting.
It was a Paperboy environmental where the lady shoots her hose at you and it falls on your head.
All of a sudden we were getting drenched playing Paperboy.
Yeah.
But there wasn't many classics that they have on this side. There was...
like five.
Yeah, well, there was Paperboy. I guess Wars. Dragon's Lair, if you consider that a classic, there was the Star Wars, the Vector.
Yeah,
there was Galaga.
I think there's an Asteroids.
There was an Asteroids. Yeah. Was there a pack? I think there was a Ms. Pack.
Yeah.
And, most likely,
some Nintendo cabs.
Those don't count.
Mario. They had a Mario Brothers wide body.
Did they? No.
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe it's not a wide body. They had a Mario Brothers. Yeah.
But again, that's an arcade that, it's you know, there's people relying on the income to put shoes on their kids' feet or whatever. And
his kid can't even walk yet.
He's got another one walking. But so, yeah, they have to change with the time. I mean, 50-year-old guys aren't going out to, you know, spend a bunch of money, you know, to go drink downtown. It's an expensive real estate, and they got to do something. And, you know, luckily, Clay has these awesome visions and these skills to, like, play with LED lights and make just amazing displays all over the place. They made the place look really fucking cool. Yeah. There was like lit lockers where you can like with a pin pad where you can like put your shit in there, and it's got like every phone charger in the world that you can like plug your phone in and then put your code in. And even like the coat racks were like back LED lit.
You didn't fucking have coat racks in war games.
Yeah.
God, bullshit.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Fucking iPhone chargers in war games.
Yeah, I think the coat racks is one thing I appreciate about that, because in the winter when you go in there, and especially if it's busy, you just want some place to put your coat.
Hot as balls.
Then, like, having that, they've got a big area up front where you can put your coat, you can put all your junk, especially if you bike there or something. And so it's very convenient instead of just, and it's kind of like an open area at the beginning, so you're not just in to all the people where you were before. When before you walked in, and there was just, you were in the thick of it. And this one, there's kind of like a little buffer before you get to all the folks jammed in around the cabinets. And they have two different rooms. So there was a room up front, and then there was a room towards the back where the bar was. And they have a seating area. And apparently what Clay was telling us was that it could be reconfigured. So there was walls that had screens in them. And I guess what was that, Jordan? He said they were going to have like NES minis or something, similar to that, where you could actually play games.
The tables had screens where you can the idea is you could order your food and drinks. And then like, meanwhile, while you're waiting, they also have like controllers that snap out of them to where you can play like NES games there right at your table. So that seems cool. The NES part or whatever wasn't working quite yet. But the screens were all there, and it's all like this gray steel stuff. It's really cool looking. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it was all reconfigurable because they have various events there, the trivia show, game show type things, and, you know, DJs and things like that. And the sound system was freaking massive. It was like they're going to have a rave in there or something. This shit was insane. He's, oh, yeah, you should see up in the attic. And he had, like, a rack of power amplifiers, like, two racks full of, like, huge power amplifiers plus other shit. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Bathroom.
You guys went like, all out. Like, oh, the bathroom is crazy.
Yeah, if you, like, look up when you go to the bathroom, it's, like, playing Zaxxon.
Super infinity mirrors, if you ever looked at those on the internet, where it's got those, like, LEDs that look like they go on forever. Well, there's, like, 64 of those in the ceiling, and they're multicolor, and you can hit the light switch, and it does a freaking disco mode for you. It's really cool.
It's a very cool space.
And you lose concentration and piss all over the wall.
But it's better than not being able to see the bathroom, like the old spot.
The old spot.
It was super dark in the
dark. Can. But it had like the crazy Pac-Man mosaic that was cool.
The only source of light was the sink, so that's where you just had to piss.
I don't want to look at the fucking tiles when I'm going to the bathroom.
Anyhow, it's a beautiful spot. And so when they open up the other spot, the old one, when they make them tied back together, the idea is to bring more classics back in, is what I've heard.
I hope so, because I was a little disappointed selection.
It's very new game heavy.
It's the stuff people play, the JAMA stuff.
And Killer Queen takes up so much floor space.
Fuck that game.
But hey,
it brings people out.
Yeah,
for sure.
You got 18 people all putting a dollar in at a time or whatever it takes, you know. So they make some money off that. And then they did have a nice row of Williams pins where, you know, I spent my game playing time.
Theater Magic.
That was fun.
Yeah, Theater Magic. I played Theater Magic all night.
You were just stuck there the whole time.
Yep. That's good enough for me.
I think it was like, I don't know, I was looking around and trying to actually like observe and see like how I really felt about it. And it's very fancy. It's like, it's almost too nice for an arcade. That's how I really felt out about it. But I understand like the business perspective where, you know, you got to cater to all audiences. You got to have new games and stuff. But it is sad that, you know, for don't know, people like us that appreciate, you know, all classics and stuff like that, that it's not all classics. But then I look at Grinkers, you know, and it's like all class.
That's the place to go.
And I'm like, you know, I really wish that it could have both aspects of the retro war games and all classics, like just a snapshot in time, you know. And
but it's a little incongruent, right? Like to have the war games theme and then a bunch of 90s games.
Yeah. But you know, I don't want to quote Clay, but he said himself that people don't really have, you know, the people that go in there don't have memories of the old classics, right? So
they're not old enough.
So like, I think that them building the war game stuff is like, you know, hey, at least we can have this.
Yeah.
And we can appreciate this part of it. And the customers can appreciate the new games or something like that.
90% of the people who go in there aren't even going to realize that it's war games.
Or, yeah. But to him, you know, it's like, it's a cool place to be because, like, that's where he grew up with that.
I agree.
If the fucking children do not get an opportunity to be exposed to the classics, then they will never develop an appreciation for them.
Yeah. So one thing about those 90s games, they're so flat. There's like, you're not really doing anything, and you got Simpsons, you got Turtles, you got X-Men. it's like the pinballs nowadays where they're all a license. Yeah. It's like, these, would anybody play Simpsons if it wasn't Simpsons?
I just don't play it.
Period. Cowboys of Moo Mesa. Well,
it sucks.
Yeah, but how many people have played
that? The same one too?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, Sunset Riders.
That's
right?
It. Sunset Riders.
Cowboys was one too, and they also did what, Bucky O'Hare, and was Moonwalker? Was that Konami or was that Sega?
Sega.
That's Sega. Well, it's all go right and fight.
Yeah, it's just the classics have so much better gameplay and replay value, but I guess if nobody's going to take the time to play them, then I guess they're not going to.
Well,
or if they can't be exposed to them, then
I feel like they just had such a diversity of concepts that's missing. You know, any new video games that come out are driving games or shooting games.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
And it's, you know,
sad.
Tempest, like, what if these aliens were crawling down at you, you know, from the bottom of a tube and you had to kill them all? You know, Centipede, what if you were in a garden and you had to blow away all the bugs? I guess maybe there's a lot of shooting in these games.
It's not the same. It's not the same. A rifle or
but or, you know, the environments are different. Like Burger Time, you're walking over condiments to build a huge burger that nobody in this game could actually eat.
Did they just have better drugs in the early 80s or
they
what?
They did.
Yeah.
Well, that's what was going on at Atari, wasn't it? There was like lots of pot smoking and stuff going on, lots of drugs happening. Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is that Ground Control knows their audience and obviously really, really know them because they're able to expand.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is kind of sad that, you know,
you can't take it away from them for wanting to have a successful business. Yeah.
But I really do hope that when they expand and remodel the other side, that they have that capacity, like Jordan said, to add, you know, everything that they have enough capacity to basically have enough of their classic games in there.
Yeah, to bring the classic games back so people have they have a way to experience those.
Exactly.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for.
You know, if they just have the classics in the old space, then no one's going to go there, right? It's going to be the old game ghetto. No one's going to fucking go.
The only way, old farts and
the old man
like
section.
Wheel of Fortune playing on the TV and shit.
But I'm serious. If they don't earn, then people aren't going to go play them, right?
Then
whereas if you have them mixed in with the other games, then, you know, people are going to go to play that and then say, oh, hey, what's this cool game sitting next to this? This looks interesting.
You know what's really cool, though, is if you're rich enough to not give a fuck if people don't go in your building and play games and be like, you know what? These are the games I had nostalgia for. And you know what? Who gives a fuck if no one comes and plays them? Like, and that's why the Grinkers model is I don't know.
Well,
I guess I just keep on going back to that. That's awesome that he can have that. Right?
I don't know if it's a business model to be like, you're independently wealthy and don't have to make money doing the thing.
I know. And if people come, that's
not
awesome.
It's not really a sustainable model is what I'm saying.
It is if you're rich, right?
Well, I mean, to a point.
Yeah.
They call that diversification.
Yeah.
You have some things that make money and some that maybe don't.
It's the tax write-off.
Yeah.
Does Ground Control have a tapper? Because that's the one game that really should be in there.
I don't think so. They didn't. They probably
I guarantee one of those guys own one or three, but is there one
There's
in
not
there?
One on the floor.
No. Yeah, they need one in there. For sure.
I guess based on observations of what I did see, though, that I noticed that I think all the games that had marquees, games that still had marquees, were all LED marquees, which I understand, again, from a economical standpoint, but it looked kind of weird.
They don't want to keep changing those bulbs.
Yeah. I actually like the look of it.
You like the color temperature, but...
I do. Oh, it depends on it, right? You know, like,
but
y'all want to match it, but yeah,
it depends on the art you're backlighting. Like, some of it can use a cooler light.
I agree.
Yeah,
like Pac-Man, you know, has that huge white background, and so cool white looks good because it makes it look white, not yellow.
Yep.
So, anyways,
I like it a lot,
but I did enjoy it, and I really appreciate being invited, and I had a really good time, and I found myself playing, you know, games that I wouldn't play. Because they were mixed in with the classics, and you know, I think, you know, my best advice for arcades is that you don't adjust or align games in manufacturer rows. You mix them up. You know, you find a lot of arcades or personal collections where they'll put a row of Nintendos or whatever. But like, if you scatter those around, then
are you dissing me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I put all my Vector games together. That way I got plenty of room to move around back there because nobody plays them.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, like if you put a popular Vector game next to an unpopular Raster game, then maybe after you're done playing that Vector game, you'd play that piece of shit Raster game. I don't know. I think like mixing them up like that is better.
Yeah, maybe like a ground control, but at a place like Grinker's where, as we're saying, is that he doesn't care as much about the game's Ernie, maybe he does put stuff in together in a row. Because I
think he mixes his up pretty good.
Does he?
Except for like the Burger Time.
Does he not have like a? Does he have like a black? Does he have like a black and white section and?
No, they're all mixed up.
Vector section.
Yeah, he mixes them up pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. That's awesome.
I don't think I didn't really notice any rhyme or reason. I didn't see any rows like you see in people's home arcades with their Nintendo row or their Vector row. They were all pretty much just mixed up in there. I think he's trying to get people to play more games, different games.
Yep. See, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Play more games.
Yeah. This is the supermarket theory. You know, you got to put like the bread on one side of the store and the fucking peanut butter on the other side.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So this leads into a topic I've been thinking about, which is... new games or newer than golden era games. I think that they're deserving of being called classics.
You talking about like the JAMA era?
I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is worthy of being called a classic game.
Really? Just trolling.
There you go. No, I'm not trolling. Or okay, let's say I don't like that one that much, but let's say let's say Raiden 2. I really like Raiden 2.
Shmups are like their own little world, though, I think. I don't know.
Do you think that's a classic game?
No.
Why not?
I can't weigh in on it, so I don't know.
I don't know. To me, this goes to applying it to every single hobby that people are in, like classic cars, whatever, classic washing machines.
Do they have to be 20 years old or older?
To me, classic's not defined by like the relative era that you like grew up in experiencing. Like, I didn't even experience any of these classic games, basically, and so like I'm like a traitor. But to me, I think classics are defined by like what started it all and what other games are inspired by. But you know, I also can see how like on the classic rock radio station how they start playing Guns N' Roses now on the on classic rock, and you know they're accepting stuff that was in the 80s now as classic.
Of course,
you know, and it's like a moving target of stuff, I guess. You know, I don't know.
I could say that there are JAMA games that people really like, and there are a few that I like too. I think you know, Rampart, isn't that JAMA? It is JAMA.
No, yeah, it is.
Rampart is JAMA. I have and a board Clacks. Somewhere. Clacks. Yep. There are some good JAMA games. So I can't just, you know, it used to be very easy just to say, oh, JAMA junk, you know, just it's garbage. But there are definitely some good games Double Dragon is kind of the first, like, you know, go right and fight that I remember. And I played it in the arcade, and I had a good time with it. But it was a just, well, you can finish it on a quarter, actually. So I guess where I get mad is where there are games that you can't get good at unless you just drop a bunch of quarters in it.
Like Gauntlet.
But yeah, yeah.
Continue games.
Continue games. Yep. But then some people actually are good at those. Like, you know, like our friend Matt Hall, he always surprises me at his prowess with these JAMA games, which I thought were just meant to take your quarter, and he can play them forever. And I'm like, well, I guess they weren't just garbage, you know, impossible to get good at. That's my big thing, is games that you can't get good at without just dropping a bunch of quarters in. And so in a home environment, you just hit continue forever, and then once you get to the end, you don't care about it anymore.
Yeah.
And you want to get rid of it. So, and then the other thing that yet sours me on JAMA games is how many classics got converted to become something else. So those are my two big sticky points as far as like not wanting to welcome them into the realm of classic games.
Well, I'm going to convert your tax scan to turtles.
there were plenty of pre-JAMA games that were converted to other shit, like Mr. Do, right? Like shitloads of games got converted to Mr. Do,
but
you would still consider Mr. Do to be a classic, right?
Yes. Yeah, that is true. That is true.
So well, I guess here's my point, is that I think that it has been very easy to say that golden age games are classic games. And I think the further away we get from the era of fighting games and beat 'em up games and shmup games, then the more they can become classic. And that if you really want to talk about, you know, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, whatever, then you should be saying golden era, right? Bronze age games for the 70s black and whites, golden age for the early 80s, and then I don't know,
shit age,
fucking bullshit for the later stuff. But
to be determined aged.
But really, I think it's better than what comes out now.
I think
PC games.
I think classic should span eras. I think there are classic black and white games. Pong. Pong is a classic game, but it is not a golden age game. So that's my point. That's where I'm sticking. I think that classic and golden age are distinct, and people have been using them as synonyms.
Yeah. I know I like to say JAMA games suck, but technically JAMA is like a connection standard, not a platform standard.
Get the fuck out.
Right?
It just right? came along later because earlier everything just had their own pinouts. And at one point people were like, why are we recreating the wheel every time when we can just have this one standard?
Unless you're Atari.
And then we can ignore and then put six buttons on instead. And JAMA Plus.
Well, because also the controls used to be more unique. And you had different monitor styles as well, vectors versus rasters.
Yeah, then you just get like...
Just there was more...
That's called VAMA.
Ingenuity or whatever.
Yeah, well, then you just get, you know, JAMA Plus, you know, you got your spinner harness or JAMA Plus your kick harness
JVS.
Or whatever.
JVS. Yeah. But, you know, I agree with Jordan that there's JAMA games that are like awesome. Like some of my favorites are like Toki and Cabal, Blood Brother, some of the early guys that are early 90s stuff that I played at when I was
I like Cabal. I played that,
And you know, but where I think it's the era, the continue era, where like you cannot win. Like, I think you can one, what is it, 1cc, I guess is the term, where you can beat turtles with one credit and all this stuff. But the fact is that, you know, the average person can't, unless you just sit there and play it forever and learn it. But
end games with an ending. I mean, most classic era games, there were no endings unless the shit. Just yeah, went kill fucking
screen. Is a kill screen not an ending?
No. <Yeah. laughs> It was not designed to be an ending.
But to be fair...
There's a Pac-Man kill screen coming up.
Fucker. To be fair, though, like they did design classic games, classic air quote games, to, you know, take your money in X amount of time.
Yeah. Sure.
But
well, even so, you know, there's, I don't know what the first continue game is, but you know, Wizard of War, Gorf both had two credit options. You know, you could get instead of three lives for one quarter, you could get seven for two quarters.
Omega Race,
Reactor.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I think the continue.
And even the skill step that Atari used, even like in 80, Tempest, I think that was maybe the first. Yeah. And I think maybe the first continue game was Moon Patrol, but that could be wrong.
So maybe somewhere around.
And I know Gauntlet was close. It was one of the first like profitable
Gauntlet
continue
was type like,
games.
What, 86?
Nah, I think it was a little early.
85. It was 85, 86, somewhere in there.
I think as far as classics go, like with Jordan and I, we kind of grew up in that era. So I think we have nostalgia for those games, and you guys came like maybe a generation behind us, where but you still consider those games as classics, and you see where the cutoff is, and not everybody does. And there'll be people that have grew up with more JAMA titles that to them are classics, and they didn't even see these games before. So I think, I mean,
it's like black and whites for me. You know, I didn't grow up with any of those, and there were none of them in any arcades that I ever went to.
So these games are all going to become classics to somebody. It just depends on how you define classic. Yeah. And I think we define it in a certain way, and arcade collectors define it in a certain way. And
it's the same with consoles.
Yeah. Some people, a rare game is one thing, and then some people a rare Gorf Cabaret is one thing, and others it's not. So
yeah. I got a rare Bucky O'Hare machine.
Bucky O'Hare. Yeah, it like I said, it's definitely a moving target. I mean, whatever era you grew up in, that's your classic. But
well, yeah, that's what I think is, you know, like an antique, right? That's something 100 years old or older, right? It's a set window. And maybe we're on the same sort of deal, but on a shorter time frame, like 20 years.
I would say here's one big criteria for me also is a dedicated cabinet. Something that's just a conversion. I have a problem with that being a classic because it was meant to just, you know, get in someone else's shit.
I don't know.
What about Major Havoc? There weren't many dedicated produced.
You know, I think it's about
the game.
Yeah, and it's geographic too, right? Because in Japan, there was no, really in that era, there was no dedicated cabinets. Anyways, they were all candy cabs.
Yeah, a cabinet was a cabinet. Yeah.
So like, you know, just a box. What is their classic? That's purely based on the era.
I guess you got to look at the game itself on its own merits.
But I still think I find myself going back, farther back, because I didn't discover any of those games, so now I'm more interested in older games than I am my era now.
Yeah, I think we all have a pretty good affinity for black and whites right now, and I really didn't play a lot of the black and whites because I was really young when they came out. You know, there's a few, but for the most part, things were cycled through arcades very quickly. You know, once they started earning, they got pulled. And so, you know, a game that's 8 years old was not out on the floor, 5 years old.
It kind of comes down to gameplay on some of these too, because the classic games are definitely more creative, and the gameplay, they didn't have much to work with, and they really were trying to eke every little bit of interactivity out and every little bit of graphics that they could. And once the games like the JAMA games came along, they had so much more graphical
capacity,
much more computer power, and so much more graphics at their disposal that I think sometimes they got a little lazy and they were like, let's just make it look flashy and
let's do 50 of the same
and let you know put more quarters in.
Sure.
Or like you said, licenses like Turtles.
Yeah, you're talking about like the id Software model where, you know, they make an engine that can do all these cool things and they're like, oh yeah, there's a Doom game.
yeah so wow, we actually all agree that I think
Grand Theft Auto, Grand Theft Horse, Grand Theft.
Yeah, I think I draw the line in the whole shovelware continue shit, and I just can't handle it. I don't know.
Yeah, you know,
I used to be able to when I grew up in that era, but now it's like I just can't do it. I don't know.
You know, I don't like using the continues, but I do like some of the games that are built that way. You know.
Yeah, just
a lot of these games,
like finish it and end it, right?
It's like Jordan was saying with Reactor. In order to get the big points, you can't play the game straight. And I feel like continue games are the same way. In order to really be good at the game, you can't play it straight. Playing it straight is just shoving in quarters, using continues, whatever.
And sitting in the corner and like doing the same move 300 times.
And so there, I mean, I feel like the original Metal Slug game, first one, I think that's a really good example. You know, it's definitely got that continue mechanic, but, you know, I can get halfway through the game on a single credit and I feel pretty good. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done. So there's that. And the other thing that I think is interesting about these games in a home setting or, you know, a home arcade is that because they're so, you know, geared towards quarters, very few people actually got to play all the way through it. And even if you only do that once, that's an experience that a lot of people just never got to have. And I think that's cool. You know, I have a Ninja Turtles machine set up at my office, and you know, a lot of people have been like, "Oh yeah, I've never played through it. I've never seen this level. I've never gotten to the end or whatever." And I think that's nice. I'm glad that they can get that experience.
And there are games that I would consider classics, like Street Fighter, I think would be a classic. Mortal Kombat, I don't know if you guys would think so, but I think is a classic.
Yeah. I think it's a classic, even though I personally dislike it.
And that's one that even I got to play it in the arcade. It wasn't part of my childhood. It was part of my, you know, collegehood. But those games, I thought I had another one in my mind, but maybe I forgot it. But those ones are JAMA games in there. You know, they kind of are in another category than some of the Fight and Go Ride and some of the Continue games.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat. It kind of goes back to the original Black and Whites where there wasn't good AI, so you had to play like two-player games. I mean, when people played the one-on-one fighters, were they into playing against the computer? I always remember it was playing against another guy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it's kind of cool because it brings it back to the original games where a lot of them were like two-player only. You want a formidable opponent, you have to play another person.
Yeah.
Pong, you know, takes it all the way back. You can't play Pong by yourself.
The other one I was thinking of was NBA Jam.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yes, I played a lot of NBA Jam. That was
was kind of like the second wave of arcade games coming out.
Yeah. It was like the
I remember final. playing Tekken. I was really into Tekken. Fighter. Yeah, Virtua Fighter. I never played Virtua Fighter that much, but I played the hell out of Tekken.
In the arcade? Because I think I saw Tekken Tag in the arcade a lot, but I didn't see much else. I played a lot of it just on PlayStation, but not too much in the arcade.
There was, when I was living in Little Rock in the late 90s, I lived across the street from a mall, and there was an arcade there, and I remember walking across the street and going and playing Tekken a lot.
Yeah.
Like Tekken 3-ish, Tekken 2, Tekken 3.
Yeah, Street Fighter, Turbo, Mortal Kombat, when those first came out, I would go to Games People Play, which is a defunct establishment now. It was a free play arcade in Gresham, Clackamas, and all that stuff. But people would line their quarters up on the fucking bezel.
Yeah, and
you'd have like 15 deep. And this was a free play arcade, so people, you had to have your fucking quarter to like.
Signify that you're next?
Yeah. And you know, you
did
have
your quarter have your name on it or something?
No,
you had a whole row of them.
You just have a row of people. You'd be like a line of people.
Oh, okay.
And you'd have like 10, 15 people in line to play Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter. And then, you know, when you beat someone, you know, you'd be like,
you'd
feel badass. And then you know, you'd see those quarters like getting taken down. You're like, fuck you, man.
Put that friendship on them?
No. Yeah. And like Jordan said, you know, that brought back that aspect of playing against people. You know, you rarely saw those machines where they were empty and you were playing the computer because they were just so popular. It was like a huge revival, I think, in the arcade scene. Short-lived, though.
And they still have a following. I think Coin Jam has Street Fighter tournaments every week.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they do. Yeah. I think Matt is banned. He can't play.
Nice. Speaking of an arcade that has a good classic section, the Coin Jam is an excellent section of classic games.
Yeah, yeah, right next to the bar. I mean, that first area that you go into is probably 20 to 30 classics. And
they have a Pong now.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah, right by the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, right when you go in. So funny thing about that area of classics, CJ says he's never turned those off.
Really?
Those have been running.
All night?
Those have
all
been
night long.
Years since he opened the arcade.
Wow.
He does not turn those off.
Yeah.
Well, or any of them Sega Vectors. Yeah.
No, those are the ones you don't turn on. Yeah, this is like old hard drives a lot of the times. Once you turn those suckers off, they ain't never spinning back up. Yeah, it's like bearings are dust.
Like the Edison light bulb, the original one. Okay, I got trivia.
Oh, no. All right.
Quick trivia.
Shamma all trivia. Right.
Last segment.
No, it's not last segment.
Yeah, we've been talking forever.
Nope.
It's 1:15. I didn't even put in the interview.
Yeah, when was Jamma introduced?
1986.
Bullshit. Nope.
85.
Yep. What was the first Jamma game?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Double Dragon.
Not even. No.
I have no idea.
Okay.
At least I'm guessing.
Street Fighter.
Japanese company. Mm-hmm.
Tato?
Japanese company was a
yep. Japanese company.
I know it wasn't Capcom. They were making shit.
Like, it wasn't even started by Capcom. Actually, there's no real record of the actual first Jamma game.
Bullshit question.
Great fucking trivia.
I was going to say,
let's ask a question that doesn't have an answer. So I'm right, Double Dragon.
Most people say that it's Rolling Thunder, but then there's also a couple versions of Gradius, and a couple of those early releases were Jamma. And then others point to, like, I think Salamander or something.
Irem.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's one of the early, basically, Japanese games.
How many pins is a Jamma connector?
Don't give a shit.
Dun, dun, dun.
What was the last Jamma game?
56.
Ooh. Don't give a fuck.
Oh, no. Nice. Yeah.
There's not even an answer.
I thought that was interesting that the Jamma, what does it stand for? Like the Japanese amusement, marketing something. And it was actually kind of like a AMOA conference before was just a
It was a bunch of companies.
Video game standard.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you're interesting.
I am interesting. There's one more thing, ladies and gentlemen.
I know. There's all right. God, so
I'm jonesing.
We're doing a live unboxing here.
This is the first.
Is there a background on this?
Because I've never done this.
There is background. So
what are we unboxing?
Let me see what I can convey without spoiling the surprise.
Uh-oh.
There was a thread recently on Clove where, I've got it primed. I'm good. Jordan is waving a knife in my eye.
That's not a knife.
So there was a thread recently on Clove in the feedback section about All You Can Arcade, which is based out of California. I think they've shown up at CAX a couple times.
Sounds legit.
They, I think they do video game rentals. They produce some artwork, etc. So this Clove user, worked a trade for Terminator 2 gun in exchange for some reproduction artwork. The deal didn't really work out the way he expected. He posted about it. The person who made the reproduction art came in there to defend themselves. You know, there was a lot of opinions on this. So what I have is I have the art. And This is the real deal. I've got the tube. I've cut it open, but I have not looked at this. Brandon and I are both familiar with this.
Yeah.
So I think we have some expectations.
Yeah.
We're not just going into this blind. But
so you're not saying what this repro
this is
art
the
is?
I'm not saying this is the art. I'm not saying anything other than the deal was not... It didn't go well. The deal did not go well. And there were opinions about it.
And you got this from...
I got this from the person who received the art from All You Can Arcade.
So this is the actual art that got traded for the Terminator gun.
This is the actual art.
This is like the first actual listener mail.
This
like
is
real
it's
mail.
This is like real
physical,
mail.
It's not voicemail. It's physical mail.
So because specifically Brandon and I have seen photos of it. I mean, I've seen photos, and that's not necessarily the same as what it's going to be in person, but I have some idea what it looks like. But I know you don't. So I need a volunteer to look at this and I guess we'll do Brian. Brian, you should open this up and I mean, I think we've all seen like Phoenix Arcade or this old game type reproduction art.
Sure.
This is being sold as high quality reproduction art.
Same as you get from the big guys.
So let's just take a look.
Pretend I came over to your house and like, hey man, thanks for that PCB. Here's your art that I promised you. That was
I think we're gonna have to get the lights for this.
No, man. All right.
I think we gotta get the lights. This we record in near darkness. It's fucking fantastic.
We don't like to look at each other.
No. Oh god. This is like being at a bar at 2 a.m. Yeah. All right.
Lights closing.
Here is the art. I'm handing the artwork to Brian. You gotta make sure you're by the mic.
Yeah.
All right. He's unrolling the artwork. It's
maybe we should do one.
It's very glossy.
Whoa.
Would you put that on your?
Yeah. Put that on the console.
Like, hey. Thanks for that PCB. I'll see you later. As I like peel out.
Okay, so we have a donkey. We have Donkey Kong side art.
Yep. And a Galaga CPO, I think, is in there.
I don't think the colors are correct.
No.
Galaga kick plate. Is that what that is?
Yep.
Oh, you spilled beverage.
That can't be a CPO. That's got to be the kick plate art.
What do we got? Oh, yeah. All right. We're handing over another beast over to Jordan.
Nice. So this is the kick plate art. It looks extremely washed out.
So this is laminated inkjet artwork.
I don't remember Donkey Kong having any green on it, and this has a lot of green.
Oh, the laminate's coming off.
And it's very shiny on the top. Does it have saran wrap on it? Is that a protectant of some sort?
That's the lamination to protect the inkjet artwork.
I thought that was the mask. I thought that was the mask over it.
Okay, you unroll this. How do you like apply this? Do you fucking use like a glue stick or something?
It's not really cut in any particular shape either. There's kind of a rectangle around it that's roughly the shape of the paper.
There is.
There's adhesive?
Wait, kind of. I don't think this would actually adhere very well.
Can you put that on one of Ian's cabarets?
Oh,
yeah, just stick it on there.
Here, let me see one of those.
So this is how they got it. They unrolled it, and this is what they saw. Wow. Jeez. Everything is all kind of creased up.
Oh my god, this looks like a fucking fruit roll up.
Yeah, it totally it's the stuff that you peel off the fruit roll up, and then you get to the fruit roll up is like over the top of the art,
and then it's so sticky.
Which is all whacked out, wrong colors, and the art doesn't even look.
This is like when you're in like third grade, and you're like,
well, it looked like they ran it through a laminating machine, and didn't care about the bubbles,
like an office laminating machine, and it's all like bubbled up.
Check this out. It's like what's all this shit in here? Like
I don't know what's that rectangle around it, and then
what do you do? Do you put it on as a rectangle on the side of the cab, or are you supposed to trim it with
just straight up square?
I'm baffled at this,
and it's got some like lines on the edges too.
I don't know. I would be like, is this a joke? It's like delaminating.
But
everywhere.
Are they selling this? Is this something that like a product that they're selling?
All You Can Arcade.
Totally.
But I mean, it's everything. It's like it is super washed out.
Especially the Galaga one.
So basically, it's like
the Galaga.
It's wrinkly, right? It's like delaminating everywhere. It's like when I first got a job and there was a laminator there, and I decided that there was a good idea to laminate my social security card. And
does it have a border on it? Maybe that's the one they printed.
I think it is. It's got the line at the top.
It's like the first Google image that you popped up was like, okay,
Google
just
image search
just,
that I found.
That's it's literally it looks like the same image.
It's amazing. It's from Game On Graphics.
Yeah, just control print that. You know, the first result, retain the artboard, whatever there is.
I wish I could see what the size of this was. I can't I'm on the iPad, and I can't see what the actual size of this.
Oh my god.
I actually had a new Galaga kick plate at one point, and it's like, yeah.
That's...
Well, have you not looked at these yet, Ian?
No, not in physical. I have seen pictures of them Like, I knew they weren't good, but I mean, this, you know, like this, I literally, I would not put this on my fucking wall, much less my cabinet.
No.
Yeah. It like it reminds me of those, like, those maps you'd see in school when you're a kid of, like, the U.S. or something. They'd just be all shitty and torn and peeling on the sides.
Look at this.
They'd have been rolled up in a thing forever.
Yeah, it's, and like
they
the same.
They unroll them like once a year or
see
something.
The, see the borders?
And let's put some.
The lamination is more fucked up every time.
I'm going to put this on with some thumbtacks on the side of my Donkey Kong.
It's literally the same image. Like, that's it.
They pulled an image off the internet and printed it.
Yeah.
Poorly.
And, great. You know,
and yeah, just
how do you put this on though? Because you'd have to cut around it. Like, so you'd have to cut your own artwork, right? First of all, because
you'd have
a square.
To cut it.
Yeah, it would look like complete shit.
Yeah. How are you going to cut that in a shape?
Yeah. So it's not,
understand.
What do they call it? Die cut, I guess.
No,
no, it's not die cut.
It's not cut at all. It's just like randomly like placed on a piece of paper. It's not even centered. I mean, it's just like we got ink on paper. Here you go.
Yeah. There's just, look at this. It's like, there's fucking dirt in under the laminate.
Dirt underneath the laminate. And the laminate is, again, it's not even stuck to the paper. It's got wrinkles all the way through it and a million air bubbles.
And you just said it right there. Is this actual paper laminated instead of vinyl? Is this like
it's got it? I think it's just
one
paper.
One of them, it's come. It's peeling up.
So
you can tell.
Instead of adhesive vinyl, it's paper with laminate on both sides.
On both sides, there's laminate on
that
the back.
Nice sharp edge cut there. I think it
looks kind of like a profile of a shark tooth or something. In the corners.
It's literally looks like it was cut out with a pair of Fiskars.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's your edge right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah, I don't know what you do with this. It's not arcade art.
Is it? Is
it's
it
not
vinyl
art.
Or is it paper? I can't tell. It must be like a...
It seems like it's plastic of some sort.
Does it?
Like, I can't tell. Like, is it... it's bad. It's just bad. it's like the... When you watch those, like, really bad movies and you're like, is this supposed to be, like, stupid funny? Or is this just, like... fucking horrible.
It's
and this is
the Troll 2 of arcade art.
It's like,
except it's not so bad it's good, it's so bad it's unbelievable.
It's so bad it's not worth the shipping.
The sad thing is like if you put this on a game, like you couldn't get these wrinkles out. Like there's no
so did this person
he got shafted.
Complete side art for I'm making air quotes complete side art for the Donkey Kong and then one piece of a Galaga.
No, there is a CPO as well, but...
How did that look?
I believe that he made an attempt to apply it to a CPO based on the recommendations of the seller.
Was it also laminated?
It's exactly the same as this.
Was it a Galaga CPO?
Yeah.
This is paper. Like,
it looks like paper. Like
that's paper.
Yeah, so it's totally paper.
You can't fucking laminate paper, dude. And
well, you can.
Well, you, not well.
Like, oh yeah, I guess you can. But... You know, I would feel like shit if I printed this out. Like, look at all this ink you're using, and then you're just wasting it with shit laminate. I mean, it's just, let alone it's not the right colors.
On, like, a big piece of office paper.
Yeah, yeah. What is this fucking Office Depot?
It's like
85
Office Depot
special.
It's
like the butcher paper rolls you had in elementary school.
So we will take pictures of these and put them on the show notes so you guys can all revel in the glory.
Yeah,
it's just, so I don't know.
I think these are they're going on tour, so we got to figure out who's gonna get them next.
We got to take these around to every arcade show. Yeah,
yeah,
all you
yeah.
can arcade.
The funny thing is, you know, they were up in there trying to defend themselves, and they're like here's a picture of it properly installed. And it was just
on
like
DSLR.
Some like bullshit blurry cell picture. It looked exactly the same as the other dude's shit. It like was, you know,
was it like a complete square where it should have been die cut?
It was a completely different art set. So
it was like Mortal Kombat, I think, or something.
Yeah, it was a CPO,
and
it just looked bad even in the shitty image. And I was like, man, this looks like shit. Like, how are you going to defend your shit with that? And you're like, okay, oh, here's a DSLR shot, and it's literally like 250 by 100 pixels.
Yeah, it's like a fucking Motorola Razr, dude.
Why are they even selling side art?
I don't know.
Wow. But
it does have adhesive on the back.
It
I'll
does
give
have
them that.
Very weak adhesive.
You could stick it to something.
I
don't know for how long, but
there's several lessons learned from this.
Can I put this on your tank right now?
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it'll come off pretty easily. It's like it's the Post-it adhesive, right?
Wow. Take a bunch of Post-it notes and just rub them.
The die cut.
I really wish I had a service. It's pretty
amazing.
Unfortunately, I don't have a service in my house to put it on to see if it'd even stick properly.
Have it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel really bad because, you know, this guy traded a gun for
nothing.
Those are paper.
It was a lot of ink. I mean.
Yeah. Did you get the HP refill? It took Brian like 5.
Yeah, pulled it right up on the iPad.
If you had
a
printer attached to that iPad, then you'd be. Yeah,
I will say it's not terribly pixelated. They are clean, yeah. But I don't know. It's really bad.
Yeah. It's like standing behind it and not just saying, "Hey, you know, this is great, and you know what? I've sold it to a bunch of people.
Just like ghosted the whole account over it. Well, like over this.
All right. Well, just I think we can top that. Thank you very much. See you next time on episode 23 of the Coin Rejects. What do you guys want to do?
Let's play some.
Oh, shit.
It's not locked a crime by the to parrot. Go past an hour, Jordan.
We're at like
an hour. Oh, my God.
Thank
computer went to sleep. It's not recording. Anymore.
Sorry about your carpet. Oh, you're arcade.